Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
We begin in Kenya, where that country's military has begun bombing positions in Somalia held by the Al-Qaeda-affiliated group Al-Shabaab. This sort of bombing campaign is routine, but this one comes after the attack at Garissa University in Kenya last week that left nearly 150 people dead, in which Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility. The Kenyan government says the bombing is not a direct response to the Garissa attack, but on Sunday, one of the gunmen in the attack was identified as the son of a Kenyan MP, reigniting concern over the sway of Islamic extremist groups like Al-Shabaab in recruiting young people. Al-Shabaab says they're at war with Kenya, but the leadership within Kenya has vowed to fight back. Here is Aden Duale, a politician from Kenya's northeastern province, speaking today at a news conference.
We want to disassociate ourselves and our Islamic faith from the actions of these demented monsters.
Duale went on to say Kenya will respond to threats from Al-Shabaab.
They are not Muslims and do not represent us. We will do everything in our power to expose and eliminate them from our midst.
Joining us with more from Nairobi is Heidi Vogt, East Africa correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. Heidi, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
As I said at the top there, the Kenyan government contends that these recent airstrikes in Somalia of Al-Shabaab bases are not a direct response to the Garissa attack, but that they had been pre-planned.
Yes, well, you know, Kenyan forces have been in Somalia since 2011 trying to fight Al-Shabaab there in the country where the group is actually based. And so they regularly do these bombing attacks. And the area that they bombed today is an Al-Shabaab-held area. I talked to the Kenyan military today, and they said, look, this was something that was planned in advance of the Garissa attack and was part of our normal operations. But obviously, it is something that we're all watching much more closely given last week's attack.
Yes, and there has been criticism at the same time that the government was slow to respond when the attacks were taking place. That leads to a conclusion that the government is interested in showing a strong response now.
Yes, absolutely. And Kenya's president came out and said, you know, that there would be a severe response. Now, we've heard a lot of this before from Kenyan officials, and we've continued to see attacks. So you can understand that the Kenyan citizenry is starting to wonder if this is anything more than just words. A lot of things have been promised, and they don't seem to be able to keep Al-Shabaab from continuing to attack.
Is there evidence that the camps that were attacked inside Somalia, the attacks that we're talking about, are the base of the actual Al-Shabaab fighters that undertook the attack at Garissa? Are we talking about the same people?
There's no way to know. One thing that the military spokesman I talked to mentioned was that these camps are near the border town of Mandera in Kenya. And we do know that one of the attackers was from Mandera, but that's, you know, a loose association.
So it's unclear if it's the exact same people fighting there. What has been the overall response? You mentioned the Kenyan citizenry, but Garissa University is not Nairobi. It might be a little bit isolated geographically. Has there been an extremely strong response and outcry, criticism of the Kenyan government after this attack, not only about preventing the attack, but what's being done to respond?
Yeah, both, really. I mean, Kenyans say, you know, look, this is not the first time this has happened. It was just in 2013 we had this gigantic four-day siege of a mall in Nairobi. We've had attack after attack on the coast in the past couple years, and each time it seems to be a slow response. It seems to take a really long time to flush these guys out, and there's limited information that comes out. The death tolls take a long time to come out, and they don't usually come out from the government. They come out from the Red Cross. So Kenyans are pretty upset about this.
As you can imagine, they would be. Now, in terms of the Al-Shabaab propaganda that comes along with high-profile attacks like this, Heidi Vogt. What has al-Shabaab said about the reason behind the attack, whether they're trying to instill fear in Kenyans or just a target of opportunity near the border?
Well, there's a couple of things going on here. One is al-Shabaab has said in almost every attack it's launched since 2011 that they are attacking Kenya because Kenya sent troops into Somalia. The other thing is that we've seen a real push by al-Shabaab to extend their war so that it's not just them fighting the Somali government, but trying to create a more regional conflict. And with this long border that Somalia shares with Kenya, that there are a lot of easy targets then in Kenya.
New attacks by the Kenyan Air Force on targets inside Somalia, al-Shabaab targets. In response to al-Shabaab attack on Garissa University last week that killed 148 people. The Kenyan government, of course, says this is not a direct response but part of its ongoing operations and campaign against al-Shabaab. Heidi Vogt in Nairobi, East Africa correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
We go now to Syria, where the Yarmouk camp for Palestinian refugees located just a few miles outside of Damascus has come under fire again from the self-proclaimed Islamic State. Over the weekend, about 2,000 people managed to flee the camp as two exits were open, but Palestinian officials report that ISIS has control of 60% of the camp and as many as 18,000 civilians remain trapped there. Joining me now from Jerusalem, Christopher Gunness, spokesman for the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees. Welcome, Christopher.
Thank you very much indeed, Todd.
Give us the latest in this situation at Yarmouk, if you would. When did it come under increased attack, and what is the situation for people inside the camp?
Just under a week ago, the current round of intense fighting began, and it has descended now into a state of depravity and inhumanity that's almost unimaginable. The refugees are holed up in their homes, their battered homes. There is war conflict raging in the streets outside. There are unconfirmed reports of aerial bombardments of the camp. What we need is a pause. We need the warring parties on the ground to show maximum restraint so that we can have humanitarian access, so that there can be an evacuation of civilians that need to leave. And it's an urgent action that we require immediately.
So fighting is raging in and around the camp, Christopher Gunness. Who is fighting against ISIS in this situation, defending the camp?
Look, it's very difficult for us to say because don't forget, we've not had access to the camp since the fighting began. We, of course, are speaking to the people inside the camp, but UNRWA is an unarmed humanitarian organization and we're not able to go street to street checking what's happening. So it's impossible for me to say which groups are active in which parts of the camp, which groups are holding, you know, what percentage of the camp, I'm afraid.
Is there any insight into why ISIS would want to target such a place? What's in it for them?
Look, it's unclear. I mean, I'm certainly not inside the minds of the ISIS strategists. But, you know, Yarmouk is near the heart of the Syrian capital. And it's a strategically important place because it's the sort of southern gateway, if you like, into Damascus.
Can food and supplies get in at this point?
No, they can't. And that's particularly worrying. We've been unable to deliver any assistance, food or medicine or water, since the fighting began, which is why we are saying, can we please have a pause, maximum restraint from the warring parties on the ground to allow us to have humanitarian access, and also for civilians who wish to be evacuated to do so. The Security Council is meeting, and we hope that they will exert the necessary political pressures to make these things happen.
Is there any track record, Christopher Gunness, despite all of the other horrors and atrocities that we've seen, and there have been many, is there any track record of ISIS responding to pleas like yours from the United Nations, responding to pleas for temporary pauses for humanitarian efforts?
Well, interestingly, following our call precisely for maximum restraint and for people to be evacuated, there was modest good news yesterday when 94 people, 43 women, 20 children, the rest civilian men, were allowed to evacuate. Now, I'm not saying that's because ISIS are listening on their shortwave radios to what I'm saying being broadcast on the airwaves. But I think that, you know, the world is watching with revulsion the horrendous scenes of inhumanity in the camp. And let us simply hope that those with the guns are people of conscience who realize that civilians do need to be spared, that it's completely senseless to be putting women and children and other civilians in harm's way.
Is it still the case that up to 18,000 civilians remain trapped at Yarmouk?
Indeed, Todd, it is. There are 18,000 people, Palestine refugees and Syrians, ordinary Syrians. But amongst those, it's important to note there are 3,500 children. Again, that's why we're saying that there must be respect for international humanitarian law obligations to protect civilians, because these civilians must not come in harm's way.
Can we expect, Christopher Gunness, before we let you go, any different response from ISIS to this situation than we saw last year or earlier in this conflict with Yazidi refugees driven to the top of a mountain in northwestern Iraq? Now, ISIS drove them there intentionally, of course, but it was a situation of civilian siege that maybe has some similarities here.
Well, I wouldn't like to draw similarities with that desperate situation that you refer to. All I would say is that we've seen a small number of evacuees, and if you can get a small number out, you can get a large number out. So let's build, if we can, on what we've achieved, and let's make sure that civilian life, women, children, the elderly, the sick, the dying, that they are spared, because I have no doubt that there is grave threat to civilian life this hour in Yarmouk.
Christopher, thank you.
My pleasure.
Christopher Gunness is spokesman for the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees in Jerusalem. More on the origins of ISIS, that's coming up later this hour.